So I wanted to start today with a quote by the poet Mary Oliver. And this is in relation to her partner, the photographer Molly Maloney Cook. And so she says about Molly, "Attention without feeling, I began to learn, is only a report. An openness, an empathy was necessary if the attention was to matter. Such openness and empathy, M, which is Molly, had in abundance and gave away freely." So I was thinking about this in relation to Zen practice. And a big aspect of Zen practice is to cultivate attention, awareness, and in particular not to just live mindlessly and, without really being aware of what's happening either internally or externally. But sometimes that can become a little bit clinical. So over the years of practice, we can become very precise with our awareness and notice exactly what's happening in our body or our mind patterns, our thought patterns, emotional, really close attention to the birds outside and things like that. And that's all very valuable. But perhaps if the underlying feeling tone is slightly judgmental or slightly impatient, or otherwise it could be more warm-hearted. So that's something I've been thinking about lately. So what is the underlying feeling tone that we bring to our meditation practice, but also to life in general? And in Buddhism, so I've been thinking about the quality of warm-heartedness, how much warm-heartedness I bring to my meditation practice, but also to moment by moment, everyday life. And so one of the qualities in Buddhism that probably comes most closely to that is metta, which is often translated as loving kindness. And the root of the word metta is mit, which actually means friend. So it's a quality of friendliness towards our experience and a sense of loving friendliness and a sense of also being our own best friend. So being friendly towards ourselves and towards our life in general. And the loving kindness is one of the four Brahma Viharas, which you probably already know, but the story is that the Buddha was asked by a Brahmin, I can't become a Buddhist, I'm a Brahmin, so I have to stay loyal to that. But what is something that you can teach me from your teachings that I can use as well as a Brahmin, so I don't have to be a Buddhist? And so the Buddha talked about the four Brahma Viharas, which are sometimes translated as divine abode, so the sort of the highest qualities. And they're loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, and sympathetic joy or joy for other people's happiness. So these are sort of the highest qualities. And metta is one of those. And one of the ways that we can learn more about those qualities is by looking at what those qualities are, but also what's described as the far enemy, which is the opposite. So the opposite of loving kindness would be things like hatred and ill will, bitterness, hostility. But the one that's often more interesting, it's what's called the near enemy, which is a quality that looks very similar to the actual quality, but is actually fundamentally quite different. So the near enemy of loving kindness would be things like conditional love. So it's comes across as being loving, but there's a conditionality attached to it. So that could be codependency or neediness, a sort of sense of grasping neediness for the quality of loving. But it can also be possessive. So it can be very adoring. It can come across as adoration, but it has sort of this possessive quality. And it can also be subservient. So sometimes we see that charismatic figures and also religious leaders that have followers that become, sort of project a lot onto that leader. So they have the charisma, but they do project a lot on, and they become quite subservient and very dependent on the teacher. So that's kind of the near enemy of loving kindness. And in our day-to-day life, it's usually very easy to recognize the opposite. You know when we're feeling hatred and ill will, that's pretty obvious. But when we're a bit more possessive or dependent in our loving attachments, that can be a little bit more difficult to pick up. So the idea with the metta is that it doesn't discriminate. So it's sometimes described like rain that falls evenly on all land. It falls evenly on desert and the rainforest and the lake, the ocean. And the traditional metta meditation practice is we tend to start with ourselves. So we say things like, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be peaceful, may I live with ease. So these are traditional phrases, but you can also change them. You can say, may I feel calm, may I feel supported, things like that. And then we we generate that feeling of loving kindness for ourselves. And then we go and say what's called a benefactor. So someone who's been very kind to us. So it could be a teacher or a family member or someone who sort of mentored us, and we of course wish them well as well. And then we go to a neutral person. So this is someone we might maybe see around the neighborhood or the shops, at work, someone we might not have a lot to do with, so we don't know much about them, but we also wish them well. And then what's called a difficult person. And usually people are encouraged to pick someone who's a bit annoying at first, but not maybe the most bitter enemy, but to also wish loving kindness to them as well, with the understanding that perhaps if they were a bit more at ease, more peaceful, more happy, then they may not be acting in some of those ways that are difficult. So it's not about excusing the behavior, but it's sort of understanding that actually deep down we all wish to be happy and healthy and peaceful and live with ease. And over the years, I've been teaching the metta meditation, and I've heard quite a few stories where people have done that with maybe a colleague, who's a bit difficult, and the next day they run into them in the lift. And it does change the dynamic. It's not like everything's fine, but they actually said they could understand how that person's behavior was driven from suffering, and they just felt differently towards that person, a little bit less animosity. So that's sort of a nice practice. So what I'm sort of interested in is, obviously we often look at the bigger picture and, we want more peace in the world. We want to be more loving kindness. But I think something that can be very interesting to explore is what I call the little micro moments. And these are all the little tiny moments in our everyday ordinary life. And just noticing whether when we engage with that moment, do we engage with a sense of loving kindness or warm-heartedness, or more a sense of slight resistance and impatience? And so that could be things like, going to the supermarket or sitting in the car at the traffic light, answering emails, tidying up, all those things we do, which actually make up most of our lives. Most of our lives are actually made up of these really tiny little moments. And each one of those is an opportunity to notice how we are engaging with them. And what I notice often for myself is that there's a sense of impatience there, a slight resistance and a slight sense of impatience. So that's sort of interesting to notice, even though everything's fine, there's nothing wrong with that moment, but what I can often bring into it is more a sense of slight resistance. And it's interesting to, if you're finding that, it's interesting to think about why is that happening. It should feel much nicer just to be warm and loving, but why? What is this little resistance about? So Thich Nhat Hanh actually has a lovely saying. He says, at any moment you have a choice that either brings you closer to your spirit or further away from it. And so it's really each moment of choosing the way I'm engaging with this moment. Is this bringing me closer to the spirit or further away from what I regard as my spiritual life? Thich Nhat Hanh is a really wonderful, really simple practice, but really one that's very powerful. And Tara Brach and other people mention it as well. And that's called the gentle half smile. And that's something that I've been teaching a lot, and people say that it's really tiny little shift, and it's actually very, very powerful. So we'll just do a little practice. So what we can find as we're going through the day, that we can start unconsciously frowning. You know, things happen and that happens and this is a bit annoying and now we're a bit rushed here and feeling under pressure. And so if we sort of stop to pause for a moment, we might find that we have this little frown. So just imagine yourself, we do a little exercise. So just imagine yourself feeling slightly rushed or whatever, and then just bring a little frown to your face. And just notice how that feels to be frowning. And then take a deep breath. And breathing out, and just bring a gentle half smile behind the eyes. And probably what people usually say is that that feels really, really different. Quite a different way of being. And so we can bring the gentle half smile. The idea of the gentle half smile is that it's not a happy smile. So you can actually feel a bit upset or sad, but still have a gentle half smile behind the face. So sometimes, you know, if you're a bit upset and someone says, come on, smile, be happy, you sort of feel like, oh, I don't want to be happy. I'm not feeling happy. So it's not about pretending you're happy when you're not. It's much more subtle than that. So that's why it's often described as being behind the face. But as you could probably tell from that little exercise, it actually sort of changes even the way your face is, the way the eyes are, the mouth. And the other thing we can do with that is bring it into other parts of our body. So for instance, maybe now bringing it into your shoulders and into the heart center. And the other nice area is the abdomen, the belly. So like I said, I've been teaching this quite a bit, and I've done quite a lot of work with carers, and they're often, you know, looking after someone might be, you know, having behaviors that are a bit challenging or just that same repetition of things, and sort of that sense of frustration is quite normal and understandable. But a lot of them have said, you know, they might be with their partner, maybe he's got Alzheimer's or something, they're feeling frustrated, and then they bring the gentle half smile on the face and they actually calm down. And they even notice their interaction calms down. So it's almost like that sense of being able to step back and approach that quite difficult situation with a quite a different perspective. So it's a very powerful practice. And then also just noticing from time to time where we hold little unnecessary tensions. So again, you know, for instance, yesterday we were doing housework and I thought, yeah, I'm doing my talk on warm-hearted attention tomorrow, so I'm going to do this warm-heartedly, and it was quite difficult. So just noticing that, like, what is it? Why am I a little bit impatient here? You know, what is it about mopping the floor that I'm impatient about? And where am I holding it in my body? And then it's just really that conscious of just letting that ease. So often it might be in the shoulders, so making that conscious effort of easing it. And also the other one that is really easy, like a little signal of, you know, that we're not really being very warm-hearted, is the small little resentments we can feel. So if something's happening and there's a little part of us that goes, don't like that, you know, that sort of small little resentment. So that can be a good sort of, like a little mindfulness bell almost, like, oh, what's happening here? Am I being warm-hearted or am I a little bit, you know, judgmental or a little bit hostile or, yeah, unfriendly, maybe that's another way of putting it, with whatever's happening. And so, yeah, like I said, I really like to do this in the sort of small, ordinary minutes. And there's a lovely saying by the Tibetans, if you take care of the minutes, the years will take care of themselves. And I found that to be very true.